Welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. You are listening to episode 12 today. Thanks for joining us once again. We are very excited to come to you today with a special guest that we brought on. Mick, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
I'm not saying you anymore. I decided I'm scrapping it.
Yeah, you said that last time, actually.
Yeah, I'm keeping true to it for the next few episodes anyways.
Okay.
Just off the top of the bat, I just want to make an amendment to our previous podcast. First of all, I want to apologize to my mom for swearing so much. Sorry, Mom. And also,
Did she call you out?
No, she'd call me out, but I just always feel bad when my mom listens, because she listens to all of our podcasts. So okay. I just always want to apologize for swearing, because I was like pretty rampantly swearing last episode.
Hey,
he got me all fired up with the vegan. He knew it was going
to
happen.
Yeah, it was good. Well, that was the whole point of that episode, was to basically just get you to swear
and
as much as possible.
Another part of that podcast, just for everybody listening who listened to that one, we were talking about jobs, and I went off on a little tangent about jobs and job creation and job loss. And when I said fuck people and their jobs, what I meant was fuck people and their jobs argument. I wasn't actually talking about people and their jobs, because I care about people and their jobs. I was talking about the argument. So just want to clarify that for everyone listening.
Well, thanks for clarifying that.
Not that I got any emails or anything.
So if you are missing on what Mick is talking about here, our last episode we spent talking about veganism and its role within carnism, which was something that we had both discussed on this idea from a podcast that we listened to and an author that we were really intrigued by. And if you hadn't had a chance to listen to that episode, do check it out. And you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Please subscribe if you haven't already, and do pass us along to your friends.
Go check it out, man. Yeah, listen to it. It's good. It's fun stuff. It's entertaining.
It was a fun episode.
If you're driving, cleaning the house, making dinner, whatever.
Or just randomly just sitting there.
Or just sitting on the couch.
Today, we are very excited to bring on a great person of the industry in Vancouver here. He's been an established bartender for years. He's Vancouver's Bartender of the Year once, of Vancouver Magazine, should I say?
Yes, yep.
He also, I think he won the West Ender Bartender of the Year.
Yes.
He used to run the bar program at Laboratoire, and he also ran it at, what's the other one, Juniper? Excuse me, I'm using my words here.
If you're listening, sorry.
And he's about to open up his first restaurant. He's got a couple partners he's doing that with, and we're bringing him on to talk about who he is, his history, and his start in the industry, and the excitement about his new place. It's called Como.
Correct.
Am I saying that?
Yep.
And he's going to be opening that hopefully sometime in mid-October. And ladies and gentlemen, meet Sean Layton. Sean, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, fellas. Thanks for having me on. I apologize in advance to Mickey's mom if I do swear, because
she doesn't care if anyone else swears.
Okay,
so you're
cool.
Good. You're in the clear.
If my mom listens to this, which I don't know if she knows what a podcast is, she might. I apologize as well, because I tend to be known to drop an F-bomb or two when I start talking about
it. We have the explicit rating, so we're fine.
Cool.
We're good.
All right.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
That's good. So Sean's here. We're very excited to chat with him. But before, I also want to talk about a new episode, or should I say monthly podcast, that we're going to be doing in conjunction with the Track and Food. Mick and I have been discussing, and there's a lot of great literature out there that we're really excited about, a lot of things about food and culture. And starting in the month of September, we're each going to be picking one book per month, and I'll be starting with the first month, and he'll be rotating after that. And the first book we've chosen for next month is going to be Kitchen Confidential, Anthony Bourdain's seminal book that came out in 2000. Both Mick and I know of Anthony Bourdain, but we both will be straight up front and say that we actually don't know much about him per se. I have yet to read this book. I don't think you've read it as well, Mickey.
No.
And
no,
I've actually never watched any of his TV shows or anything like this.
Me neither.
Parts unknown. But Sean, we were talking about this before we got on. Sean was saying that you're actually a big fan.
Massive fan. And when I saw the news, I remember the morning still, to like it was yesterday. Horrible news. And yeah, he's definitely someone that was very inspirational to me. I'm a huge travel person, and with this new project that I'm doing right now, certain parts of it may have never happened if it wasn't for someone like him and his TV shows. For it to go a little bit off topic, we were on one of our R&D trips to Spain. It's a Spanish restaurant that we're doing, and just on a whim, we had a few days left when we were in Barcelona, and I looked at Frankie, and we're looking at the soccer schedule. We're huge soccer fans. We base everything with Spain around soccer.
Oh, perfect.
And the next day, there was a Champions League game. Bayern Munich was playing Atletico Madrid. And we'd had our fun already in Barcelona. We're like, fuck it, let's jump on a train and let's go to Madrid. And we did that. And then we went to Madrid. We went to the game. It was incredible, amazing. If you ever go to a Champions League game, you will not have a sporting experience like it.
It's
but
crazy.
Then we stayed 2 days in Madrid, and it completely blew our minds. We weren't planning on going. And that was sort of like a, hey, like, you know, Anthony Bourdain always talks about, like, if you think of doing something, just do it. You want to travel? Travel. And we went, we jumped on the train, and then Madrid completely changed our idea of the concept. Originally, we were going to be strictly Barcelona style, and now we're like a mashup of both, because we had so much fun in Madrid that we actually went back a year later and spent 5 days there. Nice. We were so impressed.
Well,
so,
like, because I've spent some time in Spain. Have you been there, Mick, before?
No. Just Germany and England, okay. Actually. Yeah.
So I went traveling to Spain when I was 22, and that was a point in my life when I actually didn't drink at all. So I think if I did it now, I think I would probably do it in America.
Yeah, Jamie never drank until he was 24. Is that fucking weird?
Good for you, man. Did you like skip high school or something?
No, I didn't drink at all in high school. I was a big athlete. I was trying to.
That's cool.
I was this kid who thought
you're wise beyond your years, I guess.
Huh. Yeah.
I don't know if it was wise. It was more stupid, but.
Wise with that, with the poison.
Well, I'll tell you this. I missed a lot of those moments where, you know, when you run into that person who's like, you know, 30 and they're like, here, have a shot of tequila, and they give you that face. So it's like, whoa, I can't do that because I destroyed too much tequila in my body when I was like 18 years old. I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
I'm lucky. I'm very happy that I didn't do that. So I didn't spoil anything for myself, but
wow. So do you have any like liqueurs that trigger like that sort of response?
No, I'll give you some facts here. One, first thing I ever tasted in my entire life was Oban Scotch as a shot.
Classy.
Because everyone does that.
Yeah, exactly.
Shot of Oban.
The second thing I ever had was a shot of gin. So there's two great ways to get into alcohol. And then I've never thrown up from drinking.
Wow. So you probably never tasted Fireball.
I mean, I've had Fireball.
You have?
Yeah.
Because I haven't had it since I was like 18.
Yeah, see, there you go. So like a lot of people have those things. It's like, or like Jose Cuervo is like a thing that they're like, if I smell puke.
Mine's Sambuca. What's yours?
Something that would make me puke?
The one thing that you had an experience when you were, you know, a rowdy teenager where like you just had too much and you threw up all over yourself.
Yeah, that's a good question. There's nothing really that stands out like that.
Oh.
There's things that I don't like love to drink, like a lot of those sweet liqueurs, but there's nothing that I would just completely swear off.
Mickey, he's a gentleman. That's why we brought him on. He doesn't do those things. Don't you know this?
Yes. It's responsible, sophisticated drinking, classy drinking, sexy drinking.
Sexy drinking. Sexy, there you go.
There you go.
I'm down with that.
But yeah, no, I slowly got into it once I was 24 and 25. And then the first thing I thought that was cool to drink was Jack and Coke. And I quickly realized that was not the case at all.
Yeah.
So, but.
It's pretty cool, I guess. I don't know.
Rum and Cokes are coming back.
Yeah, Rum and Cokes.
I love a good Rum and Coke. Yeah, there's a bar in Toronto called Rum Bar that it's the same people that do the Black Hoof. And
okay,
we were there a couple of years ago and we had like bottle service, but it was like cool bottle service. We had a bottle of rum with like a bunch of cut up limes. And then we had some really cool colas and we had rum and cokes. And it was phenomenal.
Like craft cola. Thing.
Like a lot of rum and just a touch of Coke and a squeeze of lime. And you try it with like different colas or you try it with different rum and it's a delicious drink.
I can actually see that. Like if you put like a little bit of cola, like not like drown it in cola, but like if you have a really good rum and then you just, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I actually nice just tried. Have rum. You ever had the Smith and Cross?
Yes, Smith and Cross is delicious.
I tried that yesterday for the first time. Have you ever had this rum before?
What is it?
It's a Jamaican style Plummer and Wedderburn cross, and okay. It's funky and kind of earthy and rich, and it's got kind of that not Appleton's style, but it's kind of in that vein. But it's
less sweet, more sort of like floral,
and like one of those things that you can just put a few drips on top of a cocktail, and it's sort of like Islay whiskey in that sense. That it's got so much aromatics and it's so funky that it can just completely change the drink, usually in a good way.
I feel that way about really big IPAs too, that just like you could wear them almost like as an aftershave or perfume. Just a couple of dabs on your neck and you just be like smelling fantastic. It's like a summer scent.
Citra hop scent? That's fantastic, a good idea.
Man. Is this something you've done before?
We'll talk after the pod. Well, maybe there's a business idea here.
Well, a lot of these breweries are making soaps out of their like leftover mash now. See? Yeah. And so these
when
soaps.
When you smell those big IPAs, it's like, man, like
I've got beer soap at home right now. You smell amazing.
Beer soap. Wow.
I'm a Tom Ford.
So that's a society.
It's a thing.
I'm a Tom Ford guy. Sorry. I'm not, I don't want to wear beer.
Right. So. Fair enough. Yeah. But, well, teach their own.
Teach his own. Exactly. But I will say one thing that when you just brought up Spain and your travels out there, if you go on your Instagram page right now for Cuomo, I've noticed you guys have posted a lot of kind of travels and a lot of stuff that kind of was inspiration for you. Was Spanish always something that you wanted to kind of first dab into as your first restaurant?
Not until I went there. I get asked this a lot because a lot of people are like, oh, you're living your dream. You're finally opening your dream restaurant or what have you. And I was actually never necessarily that guy. I didn't know if I wanted to open a bar or a restaurant in Vancouver. I always really liked cocktail bars, but I don't think they're super realistic in Vancouver. There's a couple that do it really well. But when it comes to licensing and the amount that people are out drinking weekly, like I would love to have a London-style cocktail bar in Vancouver. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense financially.
Like a 20-seater?
20-seater, no food, wicked cocktails, open till 2 a.m. every night. But I just don't think that's realistic in Vancouver.
No.
And then I was always like, I've traveled a lot and I've always loved, I love Italy. Italy's amazing. I've been there a bunch of times. But, you know, I think it's done a lot in Vancouver. People have done so much Italian. And it's Italian is usually really classic and old school. And then I went to Spain for the first time on a whim when I wasn't planning this. And like from the first bar I went into, Quime and Quime, which is now a tradition every time we go, first place you go. If you go to Barcelona, you have to go. And that was the first place I went, and I was instantly like, holy shit, this is crazy. It's like pandemonium. Like you walk in this bar, it's literally like maybe twice the size of this apartment. Not kidding. High ceilings. There's no one at the door greeting you. There's no one, there's no like list to wait. It's just people crammed into the bar. And like, I love to stand and eat. I love to stand and drink. Everyone's standing. There's a couple low top tables. And then the bartenders are just doing everything. Like they've got these cases that are full of like pickled anchovies and olives, and they're pouring cava, and they don't have a POS system. They just somehow keep track of everybody. And they're just like, hey, what do you want? And you have to elbow your way to the front. And then once you get there, you're like, holy fuck, you're just watching all this food and all this madness going on. I got a glass of cava. I've got some anchovies. I've got some olives. And I was like, holy cow, this is so crazy and rad. I've never seen anything like it. And so I was just like blown away. And then I spent a couple more days there, bounced around a little bit. And I was like, wow, okay, this would work in Vancouver. There is nothing even close to like it.
That's awesome.
And there's a bar in Toronto, Bar Raval, that does, I think it's more like a pincho bar, which is things on like toothpicks and skewers, where tapas are different style of small dishes. But they do something that is very similar. They've nailed it in Toronto. And so I actually went there the next trip. I went back to Toronto and went to Bar Raval. I was like, this is crazy. This is awesome. This is actually what it's like in Spain. So when I came back, the first time was when I first chatted with Frankie, my business partner. If you don't know Frankie Harrington, he's an industry guy as well.
He's Meat and Bread, right?
Yeah, he was one of the founders of Meat and Bread. Him and Cord Jarvie sold it a few years ago. And then Cord went on and did Juke.
They sold that to Booster Juice, am I correct?
No, it was Noodlebox.
Noodlebox, that's what it was. I knew it was one of them.
Water Street there?
Yeah. Well, they've got locations all over the place now. But those guys are kind of guys who run big companies.
And Cord's now one of the owners of Juke.
And he also helps development with Tacofino.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so Frankie and I got to chatting. We're buddies. We're buddies through soccer. Once again, soccer comes up in this. And so this was right when I was finishing up my time at Juniper. And we just chatted, and he had some ideas, and he was wanting to do something else after they had gotten out of and sold Meat and Bread. And so I started talking about Spain, and I got him really excited. He hadn't been, and I just like told him all these things about it, and also how it made a lot of sense business wise because it's like food, it's drink, it's exciting, it's fun. There's nothing really like it here. And he's like, shit. He's like, okay, so let's do a business plan. And he's like, we need to go. I'm like, yeah, we need to go back. Let's go. And so we talked to some banks, we did some business plans, and then we went. And then same thing, I took him right to Quime and Quime, and he was like, holy shit, this is awesome. It's like pandemonium. And so we stayed for a week that trip. And that's the trip that we, on a whim, went to Madrid. And we ate and drank. We have a fixer there, our boy, his name's Paco. I met him through Mijun, you know, Follow Me Foodie.
Yeah, yeah.
So she hooked me up with this guy named Paco. He was a sommelier at El Bulli, and he was like our fixer. So
famous restaurant.
He basically got us into any restaurant we wanted to get into. And then, so he was going to hang out with us for a day and like a few hours. And then we got to know him and we got chatting, and he's a soccer fan too. So we just talked shit about soccer the whole time. And he basically hung out with us for the whole night. And then he got us into like Disfrutar. He got us into tickets. He got us into like the hardest restaurants to get into in Spain. And we keep in touch with him. He's an awesome guy. But that was the first trip. So we came back and we're like, okay, let's do this. This is happening. So then we started to talk to designers. We talked to Craig Stangetta. We talked to Glassford and Walker, who does our branding. And we're like, okay, this is real. Let's do it. And yeah, the rest is history. We went back again last year. We brought our chef, Justin Witcher, who's also a partner. And we brought Craig Stangetta, our designer, because we're like, he's designing the restaurant. We're like, you need to see it. Because he's been around, but he had not been to Spain in a really long time. And we're like, you need to see it. So we took him back and we went to Quime and Quime again. And instantly he was like, holy fuck, this is crazy. I get it.
So what is it about? Is it just the atmosphere and sort of the phonetic energy and like the sort of like randomness of it?
Yeah, I like how you said randomness because that's kind of the name Como.
Just the way you describe it. Means it seems like,
oh, what?
Just like, kinda,
like, what yeah. the fuck? What'd you say? Come again? Like that's yeah. that's the term that Como means a lot of things, but
who
that's
picked,
how we
who
first.
The name?
Frankie kind of, this is a good story too. We just were chatting about names and we didn't want to manufacture a name. As you can see, we're very passionate about everything in this project. So we want the name to kind of come like that as well. And so we're trying all these cool names. We wanted to bring soccer into it somehow. So we're thinking of all these Spanish terms. And then we're also talking about words that we really liked. And Frankie was like, I just really like the word Como. He's like, you hear it all the time. And I was kind of like, yeah, it's kind of cool. And then when we were there, I'm like, I kept hearing it. And it rings off the tongue really well. We kept hearing it, kept hearing it. And I'm like, I was getting more sold on it, more sold on it. And then I was in a taxi in Madrid and Frankie had left. I had like another day in Madrid on my own. And so I went out and just bounced around a little bit. And that's the other thing in Spain. Those bars, you can roll solo. You can roll hard. Like it's not like other places. Like in Italy, there's even bars and restaurants. Like you have to sit at a table usually.
Oh, really?
In most Italian restaurants, yeah. So in Spain, everything is a bar. That's why I love it. And you can stand and chill. You can talk to the people beside you. You can eat small portions of many things, right? So I was after a pretty good night, because usually I like to walk when I'm traveling. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get a taxi home. I was feeling a little bit. And I'm in a taxi, and the taxi driver's chatting with me. He spoke decent English, but not great. And he's looking at this girl that's on the corner. He's like, oh, he's like, she's really hot. He's like, hot? He's like, how do you say? He's like, she's like... really, she's really like toned and he's like checking her out hard, right? And he's like, what's the word? What's the word? And the light goes green. So he goes to hit the gas. And I said the word that it was. I'm not going to say it. And he like slammed on the brakes. He's like, Como? And I was like, I started laughing. I'm like, that's hilarious. So I text Frankie. I'm like, Como's the name, man. That's, and I'm like, I'll tell you why later. And then I came back and we chatted. He's like, that's funny. Okay, that's the name. And then we talked to our branding team about it. And they're like, this is great. You know, like I said, it rolls off the tongue well with the question marks. That's the context of kind of what the fuck, huh?
Like, yeah, that. It's like an upside down question mark?
Yeah.
That's available too. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so also like no one's going to spell it wrong.
Yeah.
Hey, I worked at Laboratoire for 4 years, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody spells Laboratoire wrong.
You know how many times I've texted people to like trying to like type in Laboratoire? I'm like, all right, is it two B's or two T's? I'm like, I can't remember.
Yeah, so. No,
yeah.
Exactly.
And so that was another thing. Like, no one's going to spell it wrong. It's easy to say. It sounds cool. So that was it. That was the name. And that's how it came up. That story's hilarious. I still laugh every time I tell it.
Should we get him to say the word?
I'll tell you guys later.
Off air. Not that we're on air. Off mic.
It was really funny. And that's awesome. A really good night.
You know, and that, I mean, I think what that showcases is...
Oh, drink.
Oh, by the way, we're drinking some Fieldhouse.
Shout out to Fieldhouse. Drinking some delicious Fieldhouse beer.
We're drinking the Cuvée Blanc Farmhouse, which is white oak beer, 8.5%. And it's...
Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir, and it's pretty fantastic.
I'm pretty much drunk already, since I haven't drank in about a month.
This is good lunchtime beer.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
This is very very European, very Spanish.
Yeah, it is. This is a beer that, you know, is very drinkable on its own, but this would be so good with food.
Oh, yeah. This would be fantastic.
Anything like fried, anything pickled or cured.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All that great acidity is coming off this too. Well, I mean, I read somewhere that this process for you guys has been kind of a long journey because it took you guys a while to figure out a space. Am I correct?
That was the biggest thing. Like we could have been open a year ago, but we were really focused on the neighborhood that we're in, which is Mount Pleasant. We're on Main and 7th. It's a really cool new building called the Ellsworth. So we looked at the plans for the Ellsworth.
If you know where the Brassneck is, it's just basically just up the street.
Yeah, we're right up the block.
Brassneck and Cardam's, it's like right there, right across from
the
room.
So you're across the street from the Whip? No,
nope.
You're the one block down. So across the street from Main Street Brewery.
We're on the same block as Main Street. Okay. We're right on the corner. We're right across the street from the public library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the...
Gene and Rumpus Room are right there.
Rumpus Room is across the street.
And then just a little bit down the way. What's that new...
Yeah, what's that new brewery called?
Electric Bicycle. They're awesome.
Is it good?
The place is so bananas.
Yeah, I got dizzy in the bathroom. Here's my one beef with that place. The beers were good. They're really good. They had this Aussie Pale Ale that was like really, really high quality. But they had this Fun Mirror And then the tiles in the bathroom are all designed to be like weird. You know those like paintings you stare at where there's like a sailboat in there, but you have to like relax your eyes to see it? Or like do you stare at those images and like everything starts moving? That's what's like in the bathroom. And I like got dizzy and I was like, oh.
The whole place is random.
Like small gray.
You walk in there and you feel like you were walking around in like Soho in London and you just stumbled into some bar that you weren't supposed to stumble into.
Yeah.
And it's like a party. And you're like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Is it big?
It's tiny. It's super bright colors, communal tables.
It's complete opposite of most of the other tasting rooms.
Yeah, super.
You know those.
It has an inflatable dancing man outside.
Excuse me.
Inflatable car salesman dancing. Oh, one of those. Guy? Yeah, nice. Yeah.
You know those like those paintings that you're talking about where you have to like stare at them and you finally see it. Do you remember Mallrats?
Yeah. Yeah. That's sailboat. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the fat guy who's like standing there all the time?
It's a schooner. It's a fucking schooner. I don't know if he swears.
Yeah. No, I think he swears.
So going back to that location, it took us a very long time. We looked at the Ellsworth and we're like, that's way too far out, but we love that location. I spend a lot of time in that neighborhood
hanging out
in tasting rooms and stuff. And we were just, no, not too far away, but the timeline was. That's at that time, that was like a year out till building completion. We're like, we want to open soon. But then we looked around and, you know, we also looked around Chinatown because we think, but it was just like we just met a lot of really shitty landlords and there was a lot of really decrepit buildings. And
why not wait for a new building?
And so we circled back and we talked again to the Ellsworth people and started chatting. And we had a really good conversation. We're like, let's just wait it out. Let's be where we want to be. Like this isn't like hurry up and open in a 1 year plan. This is like a 10 year plus plan. Like let's just wait it out, be in the right place. The last thing we want to do is open and then be like, shit, you know, we got the wrong location. Otherwise, we would have killed it. It's like,
yeah.
No. Like,
how often does that happen?
A lot. People take stupid risks because they want to open right away. And we're like, let's just be exactly where we want to be.
Absolutely.
So, like,
location is so important when it comes to stuff.
Yeah.
Like
and like, there's six breweries within six blocks of us. It's crazy.
Is it six now? Jesus.
And it's like, you know, we hang out in that area a lot and I love to drink craft beer.
People get hungry.
And there's not a lot of places to eat. And those breweries, most of them don't have kitchens. Like, they'll have food trucks roll up and they're awesome.
No, I think it's only Main Street like, that does, right?
But think about
33. Yeah, Main Street does. 33 Acres does.
Yeah.
Think of how much spillover you're going to get from all those breweries.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, of course.
And it's also like, it's a really cool neighborhood. There's tons of art and culture and the people all around there and the shops all around there are all really cool. So it's just like, you know, I've done the Gastown thing. I've done the Chinatown thing. I've even done Yaletown back in the day.
Yeah, you were George, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I ran George for like 3.5 years.
I used to work at, I must have blocked out of my memory, Global Grill and Saute Bar.
Oh, yeah? Oh, man.
We used to go just when my friend Andy was the bar manager there. I don't know if you know Andy. Yeah. He ran us at Bar 41. When he was there, we used to just go across because they're super close.
I'm still trying to decide if you should be embarrassed by that, by the way.
Yaletown was a scene back then.
Well, I know it was.
This was 2000 and... Yeah, I am embarrassed. Yeah. I'll just edit that out.
I was there from like probably
you're keeping that in.
2007 to 2010. We were there for the Olympics and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Wow, that must have been nuts.
It was crazy. But now, I've done all those neighborhoods and I really like Mount Pleasant a lot. I like the fact that it's kind of outside the downtown core and it feels like a neighborhood. And so we loved that hood and we waited it out. And, you know, the building got delayed as everything does. So that pushed us back even longer. But since we've got the keys, knock on wood, we have been pretty much on schedule. So hopefully that trend keeps up. But yeah, we just really love that hood. And
So what's the space going to be like?
So we're going to be about 58 seats.
58. So it's not too big.
We want it to be tight. We kept talking about, we love conversations sometimes. Be like, oh, these people here, like, you know, this is really tight. They might, you know, like people are going to bump into people. I'm like, perfect. Like, that's what we want.
Yeah.
Like, we want it to be like, oh, like the place is designed like it's a, like there's bar seating everywhere. Yeah. There is some like four tops and like a banquette and stuff as well. But you're going to feel like you want to stand.
Yeah.
And I know that you can't really necessarily fully get away with that in Vancouver. So everyone's going to have a seat, but you're welcome to stand if you want. But I wish I could pack it like they do in Barcelona because we'd probably get like 100 people in there.
Yeah.
But we obviously can't do that. But we want to feel like that. So,
but I mean, I don't really want to do this, but I'm going to. But it's one of the main reasons why I love the lounge at Mammy's. Because that place on Friday nights, it feels like everyone has a seat, but you can also kind of stand around.
Bar nook there.
Yeah, the front area. But like you can still kind of stand around and people are just kind of hanging out. And I'm not sure if that's kind of the...
That's exactly it. Yeah. Like that...
It's tight.
That little corner on that bar is one of my favorite seats in the city. It's awesome because you can stand there, you can sit there, but you're always talking to the people next to you and know them or not. Putting up that curtain, by the way, was the smartest thing they could have done because it completely like...
Yeah, because it closes off that
closes
room.
Off it just the dining makes room it and makes it feel like a you're smaller in a bar room. Environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
and that's just the environment we want. We want it to be tight. We want it to be small. We want there's tons of bar seating. The kitchen is completely open. And the bar is like the, there's a really dynamic part of the bar. We actually, we imported tapas cases from Spain. So it's really crazy. So like I talked about earlier, the bartenders in Spain will be plating your food. The bartenders are going to be plating some of your food.
Oh, that's
it's
awesome.
Really crazy.
That'll be a lot of fun.
I haven't seen it done outside of Europe. And so there's, we have like a position called a tapa jockey. So it's like the bartender slash tapa person. Mm-hmm. So that person is going to be just ripping out tapas out of these cases that you're going to be standing right in front of. And you're going to be staring into these cases with all this really cool seafood and olives and things that are already prepped and ready. And then the full kitchen on the other side, on the other bar, which is also you can sit at, is going to be doing all the hot food, which is also super exciting. Mm. A lot of really – so it's like it's a really very much like feel like hopefully you're in a tapa bar in Madrid or Barcelona.
Nice. So are you going to be running the general manager part? Or are you going to be running the like everything? Or is Frankie going to be doing more of that stuff?
We're both going to be in-house all the time. I'll be on the bar. I'll be on the floor. I'll be everywhere. Like I don't see having a day off for a while, which I'm totally cool with. Mm. Like I can't wait to work the tapa jockey position because like we kind of dreamed up how this is going to work and it's a completely brand new thing. And I can't wait to do that. I can't wait to be on the bar making cocktails as well because I haven't done that in a while. In a live environment. And yeah, and also running the floor and the door. Running the floor and the door is also going to be pandemonium because we're not going to be a reservation restaurant. Oh. So running the door is going to be also a thing. Yeah. Like we have one kind of like banquet booth that maybe we'll reserve. But otherwise, we don't want it to have that sort of feel. We want it to be hustle, bustle, go, go, go.
Yeah, come have fun.
But we're also in a neighborhood where we're like, hey guys, yeah, it's going to be, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, you should go down to Brass Neck or over to Main Street, have a beer, we'll shoot you a text. You know, a lot of places do that. Baobei does it
absolutely.
Really well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so we want to kind of roll like that. Like it's got to have that feeling like those seats are always full, but also we want people to be able to come down and know that they can come, you know, any day of the week and get in, but you might just have to wait for a minute.
Nice.
So, but I'd love to be able to pack it, but we obviously have to play by the rules.
So from your years of working at Laboratoire, mm-hmm. especially working under Paul, mm-hmm. who to me is like the epitome of quality when it comes to like hospitality.
He's 100%.
I mean, Laboratoire was still, it was one of my favorite restaurants, and what he's doing up at Savio and even Pepino's now is fantastic. I have so much respect for him, and I'm sure you do still.
100%.
Working under someone like that for so many years, when you try to do your own restaurant, and I'm sure this has been in your brain for mm-hmm. years, as probably Mickey and I've always thought about the idea of doing your own restaurant. Do you try to like pull from what you've learned from there? Or is there a lot of things you're trying to like, I want to do my own thing that is completely different? And like, are you going to try to bring any of those experiences from what you had at Laboratoire? Especially like,
oh yeah,
because I feel like your bar program at Laboratoire, especially in 2010 when you guys first opened, yours especially, I think was so significant in changing the scene. And to your credit,
you.
I think.
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, like I worked across the street at Shil Winston and when you guys and Diamond first opened, I think you guys really set the mark for like, holy shit, the city can really take off when it comes to cocktail programs. And I mean, I used to love your Don Draper cocktail. I drank thing like religiously.
What was in that? I
forgot about that one.
Oh, so good. I love that one.
It's bourbon,
Pinot de Charente, apricot,
and Peychaud's.
Yeah. I tried recreating it so many times, I could never do it. But I mean, like when you look, are you going to look to kind of recreate kind of some of those feelings from those places, or is this going to be completely...
A lot of it will be completely different, but at the same time, you know, like everywhere that I've worked has some inspiration on what I will do and what I have done. But working at Laboratoire is probably what made me where I am today the most, if you will. Like the things that I learned, the team that I had, and working under people like Paul and Lee, like there's not a place I've worked that was more influential, 100%. Like those guys are solid, solid, solid people and great restaurateurs. And Paul is a beast and he's the shit. And
he's awesome.
You know, like I've learned so much from working with people like him and Romano as well when it came to the front of house. That yeah, there was a lot that I learned there that definitely translates to the way I am today.
Nice.
So 110%.
Oh, that's yeah.
So is it going to be, obviously it's a Spanish themed cuisine and drinks.
I would say it is a Barcelona Madrid style tapas bar.
Yeah, so a lot of sherry, a lot of cava,
lots of vermouth.
Yeah,
lots of sherry. Lots of vermouth. Vermouth is a thing that is huge in Spain that hasn't really translated here yet. Like, we use vermouth a lot in cocktails, but in Spain you drink it on ice, maybe with a little bit of soda, and that's what you drink.
Yeah.
And the tapas bar is like, you see it all the time. You have with a slice of orange and an olive, and that's like your drink. And that was our drink a lot because we were having 7 dinners in one night.
Yeah.
Like, if you're crushing gin and tonics, is another thing that is huge there. And
we'll be
crushing some G&Ts. Yeah.
Have you ever run your own gin and tonic bar before?
Yeah, there's this place called Juniper that I helped open a couple of years ago. And that was, I opened Juniper right when I came back from Spain.
Oh, okay.
And when I first talked to the owners, they had no idea about gin tonics. And they're opening a place called Juniper. I was like, hey, guys, we should do gin and tonics.
Obvious here.
And they're like, what do you mean? They're like highballs. Like everyone first thought. And then when you enlighten them and show them, they're like, holy shit, this is a whole thing.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of really cool. And that's also a big thing in Spain. And same thing with beer. Like, Spain drinks a ton of beer. And craft beer is now a thing in Spain. In Barcelona, craft beer is huge.
Huh. Interesting.
Are you going to try to bring a lot of that over here? Like,
so everything we're doing for the bar program is like, everything in the restaurant is completely focused towards Spain. So we will have a really cool beer program, but it's going to be really tight. We have
One of my favorite beers is Alhambra.
We'll definitely have Alhambra.
Yes.
And we have 2 taps for local breweries.
Perfect.
And I am inspired a lot by what Dougie was doing at Merchants. Like, he had a tiny tap list, but it was always cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of what I want to do with Como is just have, I have a goal to not have the same beer on tap twice. Other than we have one main beer that's a Spanish beer that you'll see what it's going to be because it's not here yet.
Okay.
But we will have a Spanish beer on tap, and then we're going to have 2 kind of really cool local rotators that are always rotating. And we're going to do collabs. So I'm doing 2 collabs before we open with a couple of really cool breweries.
Nice.
We'll have some signature really cool beers.
Breaking news. I like this.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Yeah. I don't think that'd be too – there's so much local craft beer. It'd be easy to
– Oh, hell yeah. And from working at a brewery for the last year and a bit, I've got to know everybody in the industry. So I was part of the opening team at Backcountry in Squamish. And so I was living in Squamish for just over a year, and I was commuting to Vancouver. And I wanted something up there just a few days a week. And I had heard that there's some breweries opening up there. And my friend Nicole, she's the shit. Hi, Nicole. Was the GM at Backcountry. And I knew a couple of the owners. Well, I knew one of them for sure. And one of them, we'd brushed shoulders a few times. And I went and had a job interview. I typed up my resume.
Is this their first foray into hospitality, or they own restaurants?
They all came from the beer industry.
Beer industry, okay.
Yeah.
The brewer John was from Steamworks. Mark, who is kind of like the sales guy for Vancouver, he was from Granville Island, Sleeman, and Steamworks as well, I think. And then Ben, who is their kind of like HR social media guy, he comes from like an entertainment background. So if you've probably been to Open Studios before.
Oh, yeah.
He runs Open Studios.
I may have been there a couple times.
And then,
I think we've all been there.
So like, they're all guys that really know what they're doing. And so I was part of that opening. And it was awesome. I learned a lot, and I still work there because I live in the city back again. But I go up there on weekends and work because it's really fun. It's very busy, and I've learned a lot working there, like, because it's just busy, busy, busy. There's no cocktails or anything like that, but like, it's pandemonium when it's busy, and working there is like, I have a blast, but it can be stressful because I'm running the door and you're telling people they've got to wait like 45 minutes, and it's not like you're on Main Street and you go jump across the street for a beer. Like, there's no other options. And so juggling that while you've got 60, 70 people drinking beer, and it's a counter service establishment, so it's just like, there's a big lineups.
It's so
just
busy.
Really fun to work.
I've been there on the weekend. It's so busy.
It's awesome. Crazy. It's so good.
Yeah.
And guess what? The beer is phenomenal. So
I just want to say that I consider Backcountry Brewing to be like in the top 5 breweries in BC.
Yeah,
the beers completely that agree. You guys put out are like fantastic.
Well, yeah, we were talking about earlier that
Miss Hazy for the first time, and I was like, wow, like, these guys are doing the Hazy.
That one was phenomenal.
IPA. And the Ridge Runner Pils is, I think, one of the better pilsners in the city.
Easily crushable. Sure. The Trailbreaker Pale Ale is usually my go-to.
But there like, one called the Widowmaker?
The Widowmaker is the flagship.
Yeah.
Really.
That's the IPA.
That's the one I like.
And the Lager's great too. Man, like, the whole, I haven't had a bad beer there.
And they have so much fun with like the social media and naming the beers. Like, the staff are all involved. They have a whiteboard in the back where everyone just throws in suggestions. There's a lot of Seinfeld references. There's a lot.
I've caught a few of those.
Yeah.
I've been a part of a few of them as well. Like, I was in the pool. That was me.
Oh, that was yours?
That was me.
I was actually about to bring that up.
Yeah, very nice.
But like, yeah, the
it shrinks.
The whiteboard in the back is hilarious. You just go read it and you're like, oh my God, this is hilarious. And the brewers are all like really cool guys and girls, and everyone just, you know, has a good time. And it's the thing that they did right is they hired really good staff.
Well, one thing that really made me fall in love with the brewery was I eat a vegan diet. Everyone on this podcast knows.
Yeah, we don't know that already.
if you listen to our last episode. But I went there and I asked for just like a flatbread, because they do flatbreads and pizzas with no cheese. Like, they were like so happy to help me out with my dietary restrictions. It was like I've been to so many places where you get like kind of an eye roll or like whatever. Or like, oh, I guess you can just have, you know, whatever. But they had no problems like helping me out with like ingredients and everything like that. So I had a really good experience like food-wise, not even to mention like obviously the beer is fantastic, but food-wise, they really were super helpful.
That's good to hear, because there's a lot of vegans in Squamish. They actually don't have a lot of vegan options, to be honest. But the ones
I just have like a flatbread with tomato sauce.
The staff are all pretty informed on how to accommodate those requests. So that's really good to hear.
They were actually the inspiration for my last column, by the way. Do you know that?
No. Brassic? Or sorry,
Backcountry. Yeah.
Backcountry?
Yeah. Really? Victoria and I, my girlfriend, we were coming back from Braum, and we were sitting there and we ordered and got some pizza and we were waiting, and I was like looking at the mania in front of me, and it was like super fun. It was a beautiful day out. It was like mid-July, and we were like just eating pizza and we were just drinking some beers, and I was looking around and I was looking at the last column I wrote was talking about the difference between the new fast casual model, which is kind of more apparent now in the restaurant industry, comparing that to fast food and how similar they are, and then how you tip accordingly in one and you don't tip accordingly in the other one. And I was just like, I was kind of drawn into that one. I don't know if you've read this piece.
I think. Of course I have.
Yeah, you read that one.
I read different things.
But I mean, it was funny because when I was sitting there, I was watching it and I was watching the people behind the counter and they were delivering our food, and how like, even though they weren't technically serving me, like I was an actual server, but they were like still getting their ass kicked and it was really busy.
Yeah.
It just made me kind of remind me of like my days working at McDonald's. And I don't know, I just thought it was really interesting. But it's like you said, I think it was like one of my favorite places to go sit at. Because like we come back from Whistler or come back from Braum or come back from Alice Lake or whatever, and you're like literally just going by, and it's like, I didn't mind going to House Sound. I like House Sound's beer.
One's A-Frame too.
Yeah.
And A-Frame doesn't have food, right?
I don't think I've ever been
there. They'll have food trucks sometimes.
Food trucks, yeah.
But Backcountry is always like just right off the road. You go in and it's got this like kind of fun. It makes me feel like I should be in Tofino when I go there. It's got that kind
Well, everything's like wood paneled, and nice. Like the moose or the antler head.
Well, they really like went for it. Yeah. Like that's one of the
things.
It's
super chill too, which I like about it.
I respect most about those guys is a lot of these places, these new breweries open, and the tasting rooms are kind of an afterthought.
Yeah.
And a lot of them maybe have maybe they don't have the money to do it. Fair enough. But I think a lot of them just think, well, if we'll sell good beer, people will come. Guess what? Like in a place like Squamish, especially, like they have the best beer in Squamish, in my opinion. But people are coming back like 3-4 times a week for the other stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
And the food is fantastic. Yeah. The room is awesome. Like they do events all the time. The branding is phenomenal. Like it's all the other things that they went for, and they didn't just concentrate on the beer. It's like the whole experience. And I think that's one of the reasons why they crushed it, and they still crush it. And that's why people still come back. Because once you're established, you can get that beer anywhere. You can drink it anywhere. But you're not necessarily just going for that. You're going for the whole experience. Yeah. And
I have a question.
Yes.
Any plan to do 650 bombers? Because I wish that Backcountry did bombers.
I think they actually own a canning line. Which is also really expensive. Yeah. So I think you'd have to either get that. There's a mobile company that comes in and does special bottling and stuff.
Okay.
But you'd have to get the line for it. So probably not, but never say never.
Unless don't you have like the big giant cans too?
Nope.
Oh, I'm thinking of Brass Neck. They have these like
Brass Neck has
like,
those big ones.
Like, what are they?
Get your
24 ounce
together.
Cans.
Yeah, 24 cans.
Hey, they both start with B. It's on my phone.
I think cans are kind of going to be the way of the future.
Yeah, I've
but
heard
there
a lot
are
people
the like ones like this we're drinking right now, like these bottle fermented ones that you can't do that in a can.
It's beautiful white wax top.
But it'd be cool if they did some stuff like that. I would be down with it. I would drink it.
Yeah.
But for now, it's growlers and cans.
Yeah.
But you never know. I'm not sure.
I'll keep posted.
Yeah. Send them a message on Instagram.
I will.
Ben will get back to you.
So there's a couple questions I'm curious.
Sure.
Well, you, Mick, you know this. Sean also writes for Scout like I do.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I had heard. Yeah. Well, actually, just to backtrack a little bit, I just wanted to mention that the best beer I've actually had from Backcountry was the collaboration Strong Pilsner.
Oh, yeah, the VCBW one.
And it's funny because I had, and this is, there's proof on Instagram, I had sent it to, I do another podcast called Beats on Repeat, and mm-hmm. I had it and I sent it to my buddy just to show him, like, this is one of the better beers I've had this year, like, by far. And he put it up on Instagram. And then I saw in an article on Scout Magazine, the cocktail that you did with
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, man. I'm like, I really do know what I'm talking about.
That was a really cool collab. And Vancouver Craft Beer Week asked me if I wanted to do the official cocktail for Craft Beer Week.
Yeah.
And I was like, hell yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And so they told me what it was going to taste like because I do the cocktail before the beer was done. It was done with Beer, which is in North Van, B-E-E-R-E.
With the extra E, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And Coast Mountain
and
in Whistler.
Mountain. Yeah.
And so
it was crazy.
They're like, this is what the beer is going to taste like, but it's not ready yet, obviously, because it takes a Pilsner usually like 5-6 weeks, right? Yeah. So they told me what it was going to taste like. I got a couple of beers from House Sound because they were doing something similar at the time. And then they wanted me to use Gillespie's, which is a distillery in Squamish, and Odd Society in Vancouver to keep it with the whole Vancouver and Sea to Sky kind of thing.
Odd Society's awesome.
And it was one of those times, you guys will know as bartenders, when you're creating a drink and you have something in your head and you nail it the first time.
Yes.
And you have this like holy shit
which
moment.
Which never happens.
It happens.
It's, I mean, once
it
in a while.
Happens.
Yeah.
And it happened a few times before for me as well. But I nailed it on the first time. And then I had like 3 extra beers. So I was like, this is rad. Because
It was honey.
It was local honey from a farm up in Squamish.
Yeah.
It was the raspberry gin from Gillespie's.
And was it the orange vermouth?
No, it was the Mia Amaro from Odd Society.
Yeah.
And fresh grapefruit juice.
Yeah.
And it was shaken and then topped up. So my inspiration was a Radler. So Radler usually is a Pilsner with fresh juice, usually grapefruit. So I just played off that and nailed it on the first time. I was quite happy. I was also quite in the shit with a lot of things going on. And I had to do it that night. And I was like, shit, I got to get this recipe in. And the fact that I nailed it on the first time, I was like, all right, nice. That's
very
awesome.
Nice.
And then, we got some great press out of it. They were pouring it at Vancouver Craft Beer Week. They were pouring it at Gillespie's.
Yeah.
And it was in the Growler, the magazine. I think it was in The Alchemist as well.
I saw it in there too, yeah. Absolutely.
We got a TV. We were on TV doing it. Yeah, it was awesome. It was really
fun. You were on
TV?
Were you on CTV or?
No, we did Global.
Global. Nice.
Yeah, like, I don't know, 8:30 in the morning.
Oh, nice. What a great time to do cocktails. It's so funny. A good friend of mine, Mateo, who actually runs the D6 bar at Park.
Yep.
He was on Global as well doing Pride themed mm-hmm. cocktails. And like, it was like 8 a.m. and he's like,
yeah,
shout out to Mateo if you're listening, but he looked so sleepy, but he nailed it.
Oh, I like
was
doing
it, like,
TV
super
in the morning.
Hectic?
No, it's fun.
It was fun.
I will always crush like coffee, like literally 2 minutes before and have a quick little dibble of something. And then there you go. No problem. Yeah. And so I think we crushed like a beer right before. And actually the Global staff were really cool. Because on Sundays,
we
love Sunday strips because Sundays, I guess, is kind of like working a bar on the Sunday. You
casual.
Can have some fun. It's chill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally.
And so they were all in good moods. Like, we could drink cocktails today. Sweet. Plus you brought beer. Perfect.
Sweet.
All right. So what do we got here? So Sean was nice enough to bring us some backcountry beer. And he also brought us some nice Fino Sherry here.
Uh-huh,
this is the
yes.
El Maestro Sierra from Jerez, 1830. Do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, so this is a really cool small batch Sherry. This is brought in, I don't know if you guys know Van Doren or not. She's got a really cool sake, wine, Sherry company. But she's also opening a restaurant in the Old Merchants.
Oh, she's taking over this Dougie space.
Yeah, they're opening a street food concept called Ugly Dumpling. And so she's super nerdy about sherry and about wine and especially about sake. And so we tasted this with her a few weeks ago. And this is just a really cool, really small company that makes some really cool Olorosos, Finos, Manzanillas, etc. And so this is a Fino, so bone dry, really cold. Actually, on the way over here, I was like, because I bought it at Legacy today and it obviously wasn't cold. And I was in a meeting right before this. So I went to 7-Eleven and got like a big gulp, although I didn't even fill it with pop. I just filled it with ice, threw it in a bag, and worked my magic, and it's cold. So it's a really bone dry, crisp. Sherry's, if you don't know, a Fino sits under something called floor until they bottle it. So it doesn't see any air. So it is completely unoxidized. So you get
this is
really like very fresh, but also you're getting really bone dry, quite like minerally. Really, really crisp, really dry, kind of nutty flavors.
You get that classic Fino flavor, which is like that kind of saltiness, that brininess, mm-hmm. which pairs super well with like olives and like
This is like Manchego cheese, everything that I want to drink when I'm eating tapas.
Oh, refreshing.
So sherry is just like a wine blend, essentially, like a fermented wine blend.
No, right? Well, sherry's kind of not like port, but they're kind of in the same kind of family.
So idea. It's fermented.
Yes. Yeah, you kind of like that. But there's two types of main sherries. There's the Fino sherries, which are the 15% ones that are always like this, fresh, sit under the floor. Mm. And then there's the Oloroso styles. Amontillado is just a different style, which comes from a different town.
Different region. Like Amontillado's
San Lucar de Barrameda, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So dry.
So like these are, and they're both fairly close to the sea, so you get a lot of that sea air.
Yeah.
But then you'll get into stuffs like Oloroso and Paio Cartados that are oxidized and that are just like, just crazy about like how much it changes.
Yeah.
So like you go from a Fino and then you try a really cool Paio Cortado and then you try like a PX, which is like
sweet, sweet, sweet.
Like super sweet. Sherry is like a whole world. And I think a lot of people like us who are in the know have had sherry. We get it. But for us, this is really challenging for me because I think I really want to get people into sherry. Right. And I know there is like that crowd that go to the cool restaurants that will get it. But we want like to really, really push it and really educate people and our staff as well to really get people into drinking sherry, because this is what you need to be drinking when you're eating like anchovies, when you're having like jamon iberico, when you're having like croquetas, like maybe not, well, whatever. It'll be good with croquetas too. Or like Marcona almonds. Marcona almonds and Fino sherry is like, I could eat that all day long. We keep getting samples of them and I keep eating them way too quickly. And I drink a lot of sherry. The good thing is too, you know, it's low proof. And, you know, you drink like 2 to 3 ounces at a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's more and more coming into the market. And, like, we want to be able to have a really good selection of sherry. And I think it's kind of like, I'm looking at it like sour beer. Like, 3 years ago, sour beer, like, people knew about it that were in the know. But now, like, at Backcountry, when there's a sour, it is gone within 2 weeks.
Mm. Yeah.
It's crazy. And the craziest thing is, you know who's drinking the most sour beer is, not to be gender biased, but females who say they hate beer.
Oh, really?
Love sours.
Yeah. Actually, weirdly enough, my girlfriend loves sour beers.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so, like, there's just something. And, like, people like myself who really like nerdy kind of things to drink that are complex and sour and tart love sours. But the amounts of, like, females that used to drink cider when they come to the bar, they're like, I used to hate beer and all I drink now is sours. And they get so mad when we're out. Like, what do you mean you don't have a sour right now? I'm like, well, you know, it takes a few weeks to make. We sold out of the last one. Like, there's no more in the back. You're like, there's no more in the back. I'm sorry. Holy shit. And so we're like, when's the next one? We keep asking the brewers, like, guys, when's the next one coming? Because everyone's getting really mad at us. And so I think it's kind of in the same direction with these drier, more nerdy sherries. I think we can really look at a crowd that likes that sort of taste and educate them with the food without being like pretentious about it, but really get them to try it and tell them some stories. And also the bottlings are always really cool. You can talk about it.
Nice.
I really think that it's something we're going to strive to really get people into. Because the other stuff like gin tonics, vermouth, I think that's going to be a fairly easy sell.
Beer is easy,
yeah.
But sherry is going to be something that we're going to have to work at. But I think we can do it. It's like natural wine.
Yeah.
Natural wine. A lot of people love it or hate it. But there's like, you know, people are educated on it now. And I think
that's one of the things that I've written about a lot is like the idea that I used to always get frustrated about one of my biggest pet peeves about the industry and people's taste when it comes to food is people are always afraid to try new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people are, you know, it's like one of my columns I wrote a while ago was like, and I wasn't dissing what Paul was doing with Pepinos. I wasn't dissing it at all. But what I was trying to get at was the idea that like, especially in a city like Vancouver, if you kind of branch out the bubble of like tacos, spaghetti houses, Italian or pizza, if you do anything that's really different, it can be, if you're a restaurateur, it can be a little bit scary because it's not as safe a bet. Like, I mean, you look at Top Table right now, they're about to open up a new steakhouse pretty soon and it's going to smash. And but those guys at Top Table know what the hell they're doing. They got some great people working there and they're going to do a really good job. I'm really excited for them, especially with like people like Katie Ingram doing like, stuff over there now. But seeing what you guys are doing and seeing you guys are not afraid to take that chance and do something really unique and something really kind of adventurous and fun and put on some really good stuff. Like you probably don't know this, but my good friends, Todd and Megan, who I'm from Saskatoon, they opened up a Spanish bar. A small Spanish tapas house.
Whereabouts?
In Saskatoon for 30 seats. It was called Duck Duck Goose. We opened it in 2011 and I wasn't there, but I helped consult, but I wasn't there to kind of help them run it through. And her food was all small, as tapas stuff, halloumi, you know, all that really kind of fun stuff and a lot of manchego and all those great flavors and good sherries. And some markets maybe just aren't ready for it. And I feel like Vancouver is definitely on the cusp of becoming a very globally big international city, and our food culture is really growing. And I'm really hoping that you guys, and I'm pretty confident you guys are going to.
And thank you. Hope so.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think, I mean, great space, great minds behind, and you guys, looks like you guys have done all your homework, and I'm really excited about it because, like you said, sherry is like one of those little hidden treats. You know, me being a sommelier, I've learned about it lots and I've studied it and I've grown to love it. And I love PX sherry. That was the first thing I loved. But then I've kind of really gotten excited about Fino. And then you drink a nice Montiato or a nice Oloroso, and cream sherry is not so much, but that's different stories.
Cream
but
sherries, yeah.
Cream sherries, I mean, cream sherries are good for their own thing, but they're, I mean, if you give me Bristol cream, no thanks.
It's what grandma had above the sink for all those
and that's
years.
What we're exposed to. It's like Bristol cream, Harvey's Bristol cream, Harvey's like Tito Pepe's. Like that's what we
Tio
are
Pepe,
exposed to.
Tio Pepe has its place. I could crush some like really cold Tio Pepe anytime, 100%. And that's like something that bartenders have used in cocktails a lot.
Yeah.
Because
it's
approachable. It's a good price.
Yeah.
And you can instantly like dry out any cocktail and add a ton of complexity.
This is
like a cocktail, like a bamboo.
It's absolutely
fantastic drink with Fino. But yeah, like sherry is a really cool thing like that. And yeah, like you said, sticking to your guns and going to a concept, I think is something that we really pride ourselves on. Mm. Like we're not saying, hey, we're some, you know, white guys opening a Spanish restaurant. We'll put everything in Spanish writing and call it croquetas and act like we know what we're talking about with Spain. Like we're not trying to speak Spanish. We're not trying to say we're Spanish, but we've been there like a lot and we're going to go there a lot and we're really passionate about
it.
And I think that's the thing that the feedback that I've got from most people that either know us or not are like, wow, you guys are like super passionate into it. And there's a story behind that. And the fact that, yeah, we are like, we went there, we did it. Now we're going to bring it here and we're not going to be a Vancouver Spanish restaurant. We're going to be a Spanish restaurant in Vancouver. And we don't want to settle for a lot of things like concepts sometimes do here to cater to what everyone is used to. Like, we're going to take some risks. We might not do some things that people, we're not going to do paella. Like, in Spain, you don't eat paella in tapas bars.
No, not
like
at all.
They frown at you. They'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's like butter.
It's not Sunday.
Like butter chicken. Like,
well, no,
butter
in Spain, you eat paella on Sundays and you eat it with your family. Or you go to like a specific paella restaurant. But those are usually like aimed towards tourists.
Yeah.
And so like
paella is massive. Like when you cook those things on the
yeah, it also takes up weight. Like Justin, our chef, was like, he's like, we're not doing paella. But maybe we can like, and Frankie always talked me out of it too. Because I love making paella. I make it at home all the time. And I think I'm pretty good at it, but it didn't make sense for the concept. B, execution wise, it just doesn't make sense.
Dish
it eats up way too much kitchen real estate. But yeah, and in Spain, you have it on Sundays with your family. So maybe down the road, we do it on Sundays and we do some kind of thing. Like maybe we do a couple and I don't know. There's always an idea, but we're not going to do paella and we're going to get a lot of people like, hey, where's the paella? And we're going to be like, you don't eat it in tapas bars in Spain. You've been? And we're going to stick to that. And hopefully that works. And hopefully
we don't
get crushed on Yelp because of that or whatever. I don't read it anyway. But
yeah, but with the no reservations thing and then the area you're in, it's like it's a perfect match to me on the outside looking in.
I think so.
It seems like the right situation.
And we're like so happy to pass people on to our neighbors. And maybe from the like on nights when we're not busy, we'll get a bunch of people that Brassnick sends us because they're really busy. Like, it's a really community
Cabaret
thing.
Is like literally a stone's throw.
Like, you got lots of shows going on. So, we're really like.
Are you guys going to be open late?
We're going to be open starting at 4 p.m. every day, and we're going to be open until 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock, okay.
There might be, maybe on weekends, maybe we'll go till 12. We don't see ourselves being like a late night establishment.
No, like, you go there for dinner, you have some drinks, you hang out, you have a good thing, and then you head off to your second place.
Yeah. And
on the way to
like,
a show?
There's so many places to drink that neighborhood late night.
Oh, yeah.
We want to also, like, being a food primary is you have to in Vancouver, you have to keep the kitchen open. So we don't want to, you know, burn out our kitchen staff and be open really late. We understand the climate that kitchens are in these days, and we want to offer a good lifestyle to our kitchen staff. And so therefore, yeah, we don't want to be open until 1 a.m. having, like, you know, these poor cooks that have been there since 1 p.m. or earlier still sitting there over a deep fryer. Like, we want them to be able to have a life as well. So
absolutely.
That we've really brought that into when we were thinking about hours. Like, I'd love to be able to just say, okay, let's just shut the kitchen and stay open until 2. You can't do that. I know places do it, but we will obviously be on the liquor inspector's radar.
Yeah.
And they're going to come see us. And we also, we don't want to be that like late night place.
No, I mean, yeah.
I want to go out and drink late night. So if we're open, I'm not going to be able to.
Do you know, I read this really interesting article yesterday talking about how in Europe right now, they're going through a struggle with so many tourists coming to those countries that the locals are like starting to like turn on the tourist industry. They're like, they're starting to like fucking like get pissed off. Like cities like Paris and Barcelona.
Barcelona is like, so
the locals
touristy.
Are just like
fucking it's not tourist pissed. Friendly.
It, well, no, there's so no, there's so many tourists. Like Las Ramblas is like
it's like
the worst. Yeah. But like even in like the Born is a really cool neighborhood and it's pretty close to that and it gets pretty overrun. Yeah. But if you go up to like areas like Gracia, you don't see a ton of tourists.
Holy fuck.
And then you go to Madrid and it's like not touristy at all.
Which
like
it is,
there's like touristy parts like in, but it's like one area. The rest of it, it's like a living city. It's like I would live in Madrid and I would hang out in Barcelona like twice a month.
Did you go to Seville?
Not yet.
No.
Maybe next trip.
Seville.
I love to go to Granada.
Do Granada. Granada's
and
awesome.
Sherry the temple's country. Cool. Need to go to Sherry country.
Yeah, you gotta go to, I'd want to go to where they, where Ribera is and then Toro mm-hmm. and then go to Reyes Baixas and then hit up all the,
I literally have no
the way they grow
what
the wine in Reyes Baixas, it's all like super high elevated. So it's like you can like literally walk under the vines because it's so moist over there. So that'll be kind of fun.
Moist.
Plus, Abrilla. Okay, wrong word.
I don't know what everyone thinks. This whole like moist is the grossest word in the English language.
It's pretty
movement.
Gross.
I don't find it, that word
what's the problem
weird
with
at
moist?
All. It's just moist. I can think of like 100 words that
are a
like
bad
more
word?
Disgusting.
That's the first
one.
I've heard this.
Phlegm or like
phlegm is not
well
nice
I think the reason the word moist comes from is because I know a lot of girls just like moist and then think the panties moist like that's the gross so like
yeah,
pig being
the
gross
word, it's a nice word moist it's good.
I don't think it's
you
a bad word
to describe cake bread or like many different things. The dew in the field was
the grass
moist.
Yeah, but give me a good sentence with moist.
The dew in the field that morning was moist.
Who says that?
I just said it right now. It's in some weird medieval book, I'm sure.
Okay, whatever.
What if I say it with an Irish accent?
I know.
An Irish accent. The dew in the morning. I won't do it, but.
That was actually pretty good.
Thank you.
My favorite word ever is a French word called, it's the French word for mustard.
Oh, moutarde.
Moutarde. I love that word.
Ooh, that's a good word.
But that's an ugly word to say too. Moutarde.
Moutarde.
You have to get the R and then the D. Yeah,
moutarde. Sean, this was awesome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. This was fun.
We are very excited to check out your new restaurant, Como.
Oh, when is it opening, by the way?
So Como will be opening, well, it's always a sliding date.
Yeah.
But we are right now saying mid-October.
Okay.
You can follow our exploits on Instagram at Como Taperia. So Comotaperia. And our website will be up and running fairly soon. But we'll keep you posted. I try and do some stories and post a few times a week on the build without giving up too much information. But yeah, come check us out. We're very excited.
Yeah,
and
we're,
I can't wait.
We're pumped. It sounds super interesting.
Yeah, no, it's always nice when you see industry veterans who've been doing great work in the city for a long, long time really kind of are not afraid to take their, you know, take their talents and do their own thing and see
Absolutely.
What their vision is like. And I'm really excited. I know I've met Frankie a few times through my girlfriend's older sister's fiance, Terry Somerville. They used to work together.
Awesome guys.
And Frankie's great. I don't know your chef, by the way, but I'm...
Justin's awesome. Yeah. He, like I said, he came to the last trip with us and we've now spent a ton of time together. We have a really good like nucleus between the three of us.
Nice.
And we've hired some really key staff already. I could say one, Shiva. She was with us at Juniper and she most recently was running the wine program at Boulevard as the assistant
sommelier. I think I've met her before.
She's like a little spark plug. She's awesome. She's a sponge. She's super like, she just wants to learn, you know, learn about everything Spanish, which is great. And we have a few other people I can't say yet, but they're awesome.
Perfect. So do look for Cuomo. I keep saying Cuomo. Como.
Como.
I know.
Cuomo Cuituero, which is that Krungbin song.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got music on that.
Do look for that. Opening up in the next month and a half by mid-October, hopefully. Up on Main Street, Main and 7th. Do check out his Instagram feed, as he just said. The website should be up soon. We want to say thank you.
Yeah, thank you, fellas. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. You guys keep me company on my way up and down the Sea to Sky Highway. So
yes.
I think I've listened to all of them. It's, when I first started chatting with you guys, I felt like I was in the car. I was like, we should have done this in the car.
See, people do listen to our podcast.
Yes. No, we had our last few episodes, it's been a lot, buddy.
It's awesome.
Like, thank you, everyone.
Thank you for everyone.
Love kick ass.
Yeah. Keep listening.
And thank you for Mickey's mom for getting him in line.
I don't think I swore once.
I don't think
Fuck.
You swore once.
I just swore.
There you go.
Shit.
Also look for our new series that we're going to be doing starting next month. We're going to be doing a book series. We got to come up with a name for that, by the way, each episode, whatever we're going to call
it. Yeah, we'll workshop it. We'll see what's going on.
First book we're going to be doing is Kitchen Confidential. So if you want to maybe follow along, do go out and check that book out. Anthony Bourdain, his first seminal book written in 2000. I should have another column up soon on Track of Food. Do check that as well on Medium. Pass this along to your friends. Rate us, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and we'll check to you next time. Thank you so much. Have a good day.